Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Round Golf Podcast with Richard Kaufman.
Hello again. Thanks for joining us once more on the Round Golf Podcast. Lots of you joining us all the time, so welcome aboard. Now, for those of you who started with this series, the first couple of episodes really with golfers that were household names, players that you would have known quite a bit about prior to listening, of course, Padraig Harrington, Gary Player, bunch of majors between them. But this podcast isn't just about hearing from the game's biggest stars. And in the first series as well, we only have one female golfer, albeit she was, you know, one of the greatest, certainly from the British Isles, in Dame Laura Davis. But I wanted to make sure that that balance was addressed in series two. So we're going to hear a number of female voices throughout the weeks as this series progresses. This week, of course, the first of those female voices is Lizette Salas, who is probably known best as the golfer who sunk the winning putt in the Solheim Cup. But she has got the most amazing story to tell, as hopefully you're just about to find out.
So, I obviously, I've asked you to choose a round, and I wasn't sure, maybe you choose your win, something from the Solheim Cup. But you've gone with LPGA Q School, December 2011.
Yeah.
And I can understand why. Is to you, is that really the most significant moment for you?
I mean, I believe so. And I was speaking to my college coach, Audner Gaston, and I kind of mentioned that I was going to do this interview, and she said, you need to talk about your final round at Q School. And I said, well, why is that? I said, well, at the time, there wasn't that many tournaments on the LPGA. And if you weren't full status, you didn't know what events you're going to get into. You didn't know how your career was going to start. So I started thinking about it, and you know, birding two of the last four holes to get into a playoff for that final spot, that final full status card. And then I didn't realize it was a 9-for-1 playoff, 9-for-1 and three aggregate holes. I've never been in a situation like that. My parents were there. My mom flew in a few days before, and I didn't know what to do. My dad was kind of like, it's okay, don't worry about it. Like, it's a good experience. My mom, on the other hand, she was like, there is no way you're leaving Florida without a full status card. We didn't come over here to like half-ass it, excuse my language.
It's fine. You can use whatever language you like.
She, obviously this is all in Spanish. And so go out there and do it. I'm like, oh, okay.
Is your mom normally like that?
My mom is, yeah, she's very like straightforward, doesn't bullshit anything, like says it how it is. My dad kind of like sugarcoats it. It's a good balance, you know. I kind of just went in there with a let's do it kind of attitude. And I went ahead, went birdie first two. I was feeling good. And then coming down the final hole is a reachable par five. And I see two girls had already eagled that hole. And if there was another tie, it would have been a sudden death playoff. And so I hit it to about 18 feet. I was not happy with my approach shot. And I just told myself, keep my head down. And we have footage from that putt. I was just so excited. It felt like I had won Q School. It was just one of those moments where you don't practice for. And that was a thing that my college coach said, because we always used to putt for different scenarios. Like, this is to win the US Open. This is to win the national championship. But never was it, this is to get full status card in the LPGA. Like, it was just a different scenario. And I think that just kind of shaped my career from the start. Nobody knew who I was. Nobody knew the journey I had in college. And I was just kind of like a mediocre, average, steady golfer in college. And that was kind of like my stamp saying, I'm here, I did it, and I'm going to do what I got to do to stay.
Yeah, it's interesting. I want to talk more about the actual scenario. But I, for example, I've obviously, for the interview, tried to look back at any articles beforehand mm-hmm. or afterwards.
Yeah.
So beforehand, there's the preview of the third stage of qualifying school. There was nothing I could find relating to you. So you, yeah. as you weren't really, as you say, on the radar there.
Uh-huh.
Yet, I've looked at the players that came through the 29 that qualified because it was... As you say, you needed full status. So
yeah.
there were 40 cards, but you had to be top 20 to get full
yeah,
status.
Exactly.
And I've looked through the names, and the only one who's had anything like an LPGA Tour career that you've had from those 20 names is Jodie Hewitt-Shadoff, really.
Yeah.
And it just shows you, there you were. I mean, you needed a birdie two of the last four holes, and then still the chances, nine people for one place.
Yeah.
The odds were highly stacked against you. So what kind of mindset did you have to use? I mean, was it just pure willpower? Was it pure shot making? What was it?
I think it was just a combo of shot making, luck, precision, and determination. I think it was a combo of things. Honestly, I got into like a robot mode. I didn't even know how I did it. I just would hit the shot and it would go exactly where I wanted to. And my caddy, he was so calm, and we knew that we could do it together, and I knew I could do it. And, you know, my dream was to be on the LPGA since I was in high school. So, I made it, and 7 years later, I'm still here.
Yeah. So just to go, you said your mom and dad were there, you've got the footage.
Yeah. A
few tears were shared, I hear.
Tears of joy, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And then my mom hates it when I cry. She's like, why are you crying? I didn't even cry on my wedding day. Like, she goes, wipe those tears off. You should be really happy. And I still have pictures and memories of that special day.
It was a fantastic achievement. Because let's rewind. So the year before, you're playing Symetra Tour.
Yeah.
So second tier below mm-hmm. the LPGA. It's a tough school, isn't it?
Yeah.
Was it a good grounding, do you think? Or would you rather have just gone straight to the LPGA Tour?
I mean, I would have liked to in a perfect world, but I needed to get a grasp of what tour life is like, and what I had to dig deep down inside myself to really find that fierce competitor that was in there. Those 3 months on Symetra, I'm sorry, they were complete torture for me. I was away from home for the first time, had no sponsors. I mean, I was a four-time All-American at USC, was spoiled from getting everything I wanted there. And then all of a sudden, no sponsors, no money, had to travel in my dad's truck, had to sleep in it sometimes, stayed in horrible hotel rooms, played in not so great tournaments. Like, I said, if this is the LPGA Tour, I don't want to do this. Like, I was crying. I mean, it wasn't the highlight. It's not the highlight of my career, but I feel like that was a reality check for me. If I didn't get my game together, if I didn't get my mindset together, my priorities, this is the life I was going to have, and I did not want that. And I actually withdrew from the last tournament of the Symetra Tour to go home. My dad drove me all the way from Georgia. He was not very happy with me. So we didn't speak for those 2 days. And I said, Dad, I promise you, I promise. I know you're mad, but I promise I will get my LPGA card. I'm going to do whatever I can. I was practicing like twice a day, playing 9 in the morning. I was doing anything I can. And a few months later, I said, remember what I told you a few months ago? And he goes, yeah, but I'm still mad you went through.
I mean, your dad's been obviously a big part of the journey. And I say journey, I mean literal journey as it happened. That year on the Symetra Tour, you're talking about driving around in this truck, sometimes sleeping in it.
Yeah.
Looking back, I suppose you can kind of reminisce through tinted glasses and there were some special moments, I'm sure, mm-hmm. there as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. I learned a lot about my dad. I learned a lot about how he grew up, what he had to go through to come to America, the kind of jobs he had to do to just survive. I grew a different kind of respect for him and my mom. But, you know, at the same time, we fought a lot. We had some good times, we had some bad, but I feel like it's a thing that needed to be done. I think I understand now why my father did it, not necessarily because we didn't have the finances, but to really teach me how to work for what I want. And I think that's been his motto my entire life. And I'm really grateful that I went through that, but I said, never again, let's not do that, please. And so the first year on tour, he was out with me, I think 17 out of 18 events he was with me. He's traveled overseas with me, and I said, is this a lot better than traveling in a truck? He's like, yeah, just a tad, just a little bit. So yeah, it's not something that I like to talk about, that I had to sleep in a vehicle and in rest stops, but it was definitely worth it.
It hardens you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
It makes you appreciate as well what you've got right now, too.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I'm just I'm so grateful for my dad for not like convincing me to do it. But I mean, it also just taught me a lesson of what a life lesson, to be honest. So I don't know if I would do that to my kids, but who knows?
There was a quote from you after you got through Q School, and it says, yeah. Good things like this don't happen to girls like me where I come from.
Oh, I said that? Wow. Yeah. That was pretty deep. Yeah.
I mean, just obviously it's something I'd like to expand, because you were living in South California, yeah?
Yeah.
And the place...
Azusa.
Azusa, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've seen the statistics, for example, students in the high school that you attended... It said at the time when you qualified from Q School, 80% were categorized socioeconomically disadvantaged.
Mm.
So is that what you were referring to? That kind of, I mean, a life there of drugs, gangs, teen pregnancies, that kind of thing?
Well, kind of. I mean, Azusa wasn't a horrible place to live in.
Sure.
I mean, I was grateful to grow up in that city. There was some not so safe places, and... You know, some kids at my school didn't make the best decisions and took them on a different kind of path. And most of the girls that I grew up with didn't have the same routine I did of going to school and then after going straight to the golf course and then homework. I think, you know, some kids would have rather partied. And at that time, I wanted to party. And, you know, my parents were just reminding me of the goal that I had envisioned for myself. So yeah, the girls that I went to high school with or grew up with have a completely different life than I do. And I kind of look back saying, well, if I were normal, this would probably have been my road. And yeah, it's a 180 compared to what I expected of myself.
Are you still in touch with those people from high school?
Thanks to social media, you are in touch with people. And you know, some are successful, some have families, and everyone seems to kind of have their own journey. And honestly, I did not expect to have this life. 100% did not expect to be out here.
So in a way, golf has, you know, from being a youngster and getting into the game, it kind of guided you through those early years, really, into the path.
Oh, yeah.
Of not being, you know, not flirting with any of those other
temptations. Oh, it kept me out of trouble, for sure. Golf, in some way, saved my life. It just completely showed me a different life that I and my family had never, ever would have even expected. I think my dad wasn't thinking about this life for me when he took me to his job when I was 7. He never once thought that. And we just kept setting higher and higher expectations, and the right people were put in my path for a reason. And here I am.
You mentioned the stories that your dad would share with you on the journey.
Mm-hmm.
Your mum and dad both left Guadalajara, didn't they, when they were teenagers. Were those the kind of stories he was telling you about, or was it...
Well, he was kind of telling me the kind of work he had to do as a kid. You know, him and his family would travel to another state, Mazatlan, and literally work on a field all day, and his mom would make them breakfast, and they would come home, and they'd go to sleep, and... he grew up with only like 3 pairs of shoes as a kid, and he would have to make his own toys. My dad's a handyman, so he made his own toys for entertainment. I mean, just the kind of stuff that he had to do kind of made me upset and angry that he had to go through that, because he's such an amazing man. And oh man, I don't want to get teary, but yeah, him and my mom actually met here in the U.S., and they're from the same hometown in Mexico, which is, I don't know if you'd call that fate or destiny. I have no idea, but I'm definitely a great mix of both of them, I will tell you that. And they're just wonderful people, and they've instilled so many great, I don't know. My sister and my brother and I are just so very grateful to have them as parents, and I wouldn't have it any way else.
I know it's well told, but it'd be wrong for me to do this kind of interview and not bring up the story. You mentioned it there. Your dad took you to the golf course. Your dad was a mechanic, and
yeah.
he managed to get you some golf lessons. So, I mean,
yeah.
do you remember that clearly? That
I do. I do. I remember showing up to the golf course and saying, what the hell is this? Like, I didn't even know there was a golf course in my hometown. And I think people still don't know that there's a golf course in our hometown. He just asked me if I wanted to go to work with him. And I kind of knew what he did, but I didn't know where he did it. And so he took me, he handed me a golf club. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? He goes, see that ball? Try to hit it as far as you can. I go, okay, it doesn't seem that hard. And then I soon realized that it was harder than I thought. And I remember his friend, Jerry Herrera, was the pro at the time, walking over to my dad. Oh, is this your daughter? And so I was introduced. And he goes, Ramon, I'd really love to give her lessons. And my dad's like, yeah, that would be nice. But, you know, we don't really have. He goes, no, don't worry about it. We'll figure something out. And so I remember going that following Saturday with jean shorts, a T-shirt, and some sandals, some flip-flops. Totally did not know the golf attire. And he goes, next week, come with some tennis shoes. And so that's kind of how it started. And I soon then realized that my dad was doing extra jobs, like going over his house, fixing whatever he needed, or just fixing a car, or re-gripping a shaft, or things like that, just for me to get a lesson every Saturday. And I guess, I don't know. I was kind of like, Dad, why are you doing that? Like, we could be doing other things. We don't have to go to the golf course. He's like, no, I can, you need to go there. And he wouldn't tell me why. I don't think he even knew why. But I remember the instructor at the time, he wanted me to do a ladies clinic with him. And so my mom took me to every store, like JCPenney, Sears, just to find me a decent outfit. We ended up finding some golf shoes that I still have, and I didn't even have a polo. It was like kind of like a turtleneck shirt with like a vest. I don't know what we were thinking. But yeah, that's what we came up with. And I just remember being in front of like 30 ladies, and I like topped the first one, and then I hit a perfect shot the next, and I got an applause, and I'm like, oh, this feels nice. I think I could do this. And you know, that was 22 years ago.
And you managed to get a golf scholarship.
Yeah, I did.
To UCLA.
Oh, God, no. The other one. Oh, you said the four-letter
Sorry.
Word.
Sorry, let me ask again. Then you got a scholarship and you went to USC.
Yeah. That's a really bad four-letter word.
I can't believe I did that. It's all okay. My great research, I'm done there. So you went to Southern California, of course, university.
Yes, sir.
So, I mean, that was a big deal, yeah?
Oh, huge. Bigger than what I had expected. Really changed my life for sure.
When you first went there, it must have been quite, I don't know, you tell me.
Scary?
Yeah.
Frightening? Intimidating? Yeah, all of those, and exciting. I was a late bloomer in terms of playing on a bigger stage, like AJGA, international tournaments. So I didn't know anyone on the team, nobody. All I had heard that they had won like European titles, Latin American titles, and here's this girl from Azusa, California, who her biggest highlight was the state championship in high school. So I figured, okay, my goal was to just be in the top five to travel. And I remember being selected to go to the first tournament, and then I didn't have to qualify the rest of my 4 years. I played well, and I was literally scared. And I'm so glad that I was only 30 minutes away from my house, because I didn't know how I would do it without the support from my family, and being the only person in my family to go to four-year university was a huge deal, and kind of pressure, just because I didn't want to fail. I didn't want to prove some people right that I couldn't do it, and I wanted to make a name for myself and my family. So I mean, it was an exciting time in my life, but also really scary.
How long before you felt part of the crowd? Because eventually you got appointed team captain.
Yeah, probably my second year. I think winning the national championship in 2008 kind of, okay, it's over, we did it. now let's see how many more we can win. But I loved being part of a team. I think that's what really helped me grow as a person, as a golfer. But having Andre Gaston, my college coach, guide me throughout those 4 years, and you know, I made some mistakes. I probably should have not gone home so many times. I wish I could have gotten a bigger, better college experience. But I'm a diehard Trojan, and I'm so thankful for that university. I actually wanted to go to Long Beach State, which, I mean, it was a great school, and my friends were going to go there, but I'm kind of glad I went to USC. It was a better choice for me.
Well, in hindsight, yeah.
Yeah. Now looking back, and my mom would say, remember, you wanted to go to Long Beach State, and see, my
definitely
mom.
Better than UCLA, anyway. the round that we've spoken about, you've made it on the LPGA Tour.
Yeah.
How long before, I don't know if it was already going on, did you kind of build up a relationship with Nancy Lopez? How long before she kind of came into your golfing life?
She actually called me the night before of my first tournament on the Symetra Tour. My dad and I were at Chipotle eating dinner, and I see this Georgia phone number pop up on my phone. And I'm like, I'm not going to answer it. I'm one of those types where if I don't know, I don't answer. He goes, no, just answer it. I go, okay. So I answer. She's like, is this Lizette? And I said, yes. He goes, this is Nancy Lopez. I go, no, it's not. And she explained it, and it was her. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm freaking out. But I'm like, stay calm, be cool, don't act like an idiot. And
what does she mean to you at that point?
I mean, just a legend. She just made everything possible for not only women of color in golf, but just women in general. So to me, it was like she was God, pretty much. So when she answered it, I just couldn't believe it that I was having a conversation with her, and she was asking me, how do you feel? And I was like, I'm nervous. And this quote stays with me forever. If you have nerves, that means you care. And till this day, I go by that. And she has just been a phenomenal friend and like a golf mom. We talk to each other quite often. The fact that she was assistant captain at two of my Solheim Cups was unforgettable, amazing. And it's so comforting to have a person like that in your corner and to have that as an outlet whenever you need something. She's part of my inner circle, and I never thought that would have happened.
There's someone who led the way from a Hispanic background.
Yeah.
As you say, opened the path for you. And I know that's your roots, you know, are so important to you. I mean, you put things back into trying to help anyone else that wants to follow the same path as you as well, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. I'm not out here just I'm out here for trophies and to win, you know, but I'm not. Money is not my first priority, and I'm out here just to show people that they could do it regardless of race, ethnicity, social economics, stereotypes. I'm out here to just break all of them.
Because I've read this, and you can tell me this, right, that you were ridiculed, people saying Mexicans don't play golf.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is that
Mexicans
common?
Told me that.
Mexicans did as well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and I'm just like, why? Why are we limiting ourselves to only certain occupations? Why can't we think outside the box? And
but isn't it not because golf is perceived as this rich man's man as well,
yeah,
sport?
Yeah.
You can understand that.
Yeah,
sentiment.
I can understand that. But the reason why I said why is because growing up, I didn't see a lot of white, rich people going to the golf course. I saw people looking like me going to the golf course. And so that's when I came out and traveled all these different places. I'm like, why does it have to only be a certain type? I didn't quite understand it. And I still don't understand it. I mean, if you work hard, if you have the right people, if you just have the drive, it doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter what size you are. I mean, well, that it helps your distance and whatever. That's a different story. But I just said, why limit ourselves to certain things when we're capable of doing so much more?
But it is. But it's interesting because if it wasn't for you living in an area where there was a golf club, if it wasn't for your dad working and being
yes,
a mechanic, and you
that
get,
is true.
You know, it was such so many different steps to get you to that path that could easily have been missed.
Oh, definitely.
So, I mean, how hard is it to get people into a position where they don't have to be in all these paths and all these things coming together for
it to
happen? I mean, it's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm one of the few that were lucky to be put on this path. But it doesn't have to be necessarily golf. It could be something in academics. It could be something, I don't know, an engineer, whatever, soccer player. I don't know. Yeah, there was a lot of things that had to be placed in my path for me to be here. But I just think we can do so much. And we just gotta think outside the box.
And I hope you don't mind me bringing this up. And you can tell me you don't want to talk about it at all if you want. But obviously, the man who's been elected president.
I knew that was coming.
Well, of course. I mean, you would expect it. There's two things that come to my mind. One is, I know how proud you are of your heritage. And two is, you kind of must be sick and tired of people thinking that you're going to be the spokesperson for someone who's from your heritage in a game where the president is involved in as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's not annoying. I kind of flattered that people are looking to me to kind of say something or to speak up, but it's, I mean, I would like to, but honestly, it's not my place to ridicule someone of such a high power or given such a high power. I really like to stay out of the politics, but all I know is that it's such a very fragile subject that I just... Yeah.
Can I step in?
Sure.
Can I step in? Because to me, if I was in your position, and obviously I don't know what it's like to be in your position, you kind of feel compelled to say something because you know what he's saying.
Yeah.
And second, and then you've got to be careful because you don't want to say the wrong thing. And then third of all, there's people from within your community saying, well, if you're in this position of power, why aren't you saying anything? So you're kind of damned whichever way you go.
Correct. I mean, you hit it right on the money there. I mean, I spoke with my parents about it. Should I say something? Should I not? I mean, I got bombarded with reporters maybe 3 British Opens ago on this subject. Yeah, in 2015. And I saw it as an opportunity for me to show how much pride I have for the background that I grew up in, for the parents that I have, for really what I represent. That was my opportunity to show how proud I am, regardless of what's going on in politics around the world. Me and my family, we are proud of who we are. And it doesn't matter what person wants to come and attack the background that I'm from, I'm still secure in the place that I'm in. And that's pretty much that was my platform to say how proud I am to be a Mexican American. And I still am to this day.
Yeah, I mean, I remember I was watching on TV the moment at the 2017 US Open and President Trump standing in the glass thing looking down.
Oh, yeah, that was lovely, wasn't it?
are you aware of his presence then?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was definitely aware.
Yeah.
He was not my priority, let's just say that, that week. And, you know, there's a few people that said, you shouldn't be playing in that. But I'm also an American. And that's our national championship.
And you're a pro golfer.
And I'm a pro golfer. This is what I live for. This is my job. This is my livelihood. And I felt like I could make a much bigger impact by playing in the tournament than not showing up. So I took a different approach to that event and I had a top 15 finish. So I was pretty happy with that. But I will say that it did not feel like a US Open. I would just say that.
Okay. Because when you, and I want to talk about the Solheim Cup, when you hold the winning putt, the American flag came around you. I was commentating for the UK and obviously just gave out exactly what's happening. And then once, you know, we had these slow-mos, I did kind of put that political context to it and how proud you were to be an American, hold the winning putt for Team USA. There you were with the American flag behind you, wrapped around you. Were those emotions wrapped up in you, or was it purely that at that time, I've just held the putt for to win the Solheim Cup?
That was all I was thinking about, is hold it for your teammates, hold it for the Solheim Cup. Looking at that footage, and it meant so much more. You know, to have a daughter of Mexican immigrants hold out the final putt to retain the cup. My caddy also being Mexican, for us to do that, was really quite special. And I really didn't take it in until I saw all the pictures, and for Benito to take out the flag from his caddy bib and to wrap me around it, still just gives me chills. And I remember a reporter asking our president if he knew who I was. And I just got to thinking, well, I'm pretty sure he has an idea now, because the man loves golf and he says he doesn't know me. Well, there you go. He might now.
He knows you. He knows
well,
you.
Well, I would love him to meet my parents, just because that's...
Would you?
I would love to sit down and chat with him, along with my family. Just say, here's what we are. We are not part of this stereotypical description that you think we all are. And yet here I am, a daughter of Mexican immigrants. I'm proud of what they represent. And I'm also proud of what this country represents for us. So, I mean, I wouldn't mind. That'd be pretty cool.
Listen, if you can put it succinctly as
if
that.
If I can keep my cool.
That's it.
For that.
Easier said than done, is it?
Right.
It is. Because, I mean, the Solheim Cup, you mentioned, you know, Nancy Lopez being part of it. We've mentioned there that the fact that you've held that winning part. But
yeah.
you've played in three Solheims now as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that in itself is, you know, some achievement from, you know, where you've come from. I mean... Other presidents have talked about living the American dream, and it kind of, I mean, it's been amazing. I mean, to that first Solheim Cup must have been an extra special 2013.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. Man, it was incredible. I was not ready for all of that. I mean, I was ready to play. I played great that week, considering it was my debut. I just didn't know how huge of a tournament it is. I mean, I watched it on TV, but you just don't know until you're there. And to have these tall bleachers on the first tee and everyone chanting your name, I felt like everyone knew me and loved me. And it was, oh man, I can't even get my words correct, but it's a whole different level of pride going into the Solheim Cup. And I needed to go through that loss the first time in order to really dig and appreciate and value what an American is. That first one was a big one.
Yeah, and you've played in three. I mean, all of them have been pretty dramatic. As you mentioned, you got pretty, you know, hammered at home.
Yeah.
Must have been a horrible feeling in there.
Yeah.
As, you know, it was an experience, but not necessarily the one you wanted. And then the next one in Germany, where, you know, all hell breaks loose, and you're part of this incredible comeback.
Yeah, that was huge. I just remember not playing the best that I expected of myself, and just everyone, I think whatever happened with Suzanne and Allison, whatever happened there really just got the U.S. team fired up, and I had a feeling I was going to play Atha. I had a feeling, and it was going to be such a great match, and I was excited. And that was my only goal, my only task, is to play your game and win a point. That's all you could do. And I think Jarena was in front of me. And I kind of got upset because I was winning my match and hers wasn't finished yet. She took my TV time and I was so upset, but I'm like, it's okay, you kept us alive. I will let that pass.
And don't worry, your TV time came, didn't it, in 2017?
It made up for it.
Exactly. But you were out on the Allison Lee, Suzanne Pedersen thing. You were playing that morning as well. There were two matches with still to be finished.
Yes.
And you were one of them.
I was playing in the morning with Brittany Lang, and we both didn't play well, and we ended up losing. So we went ahead and watched that match, and all hell broke loose. Our caddies were upset. We didn't know what was going on.
Do you get involved at all? Like, you know?
At that point, I mean, it was my second Solheim Cup. I didn't really know what was going on, so I just kind of...
But Nancy was there, wasn't she?
Nancy was there. Julie was there. Stacy, we kind of all got in the huddle and said, let's use this to our advantage. Whatever happened, happened. Let's use this to motivate our team and to get the job done. And we did it. Biggest comeback in history. And my parents were there, of course. And that party was fun. I'll tell you that. That after party was fun. And we had the European players come and congratulate us. And all in all, it's just golf. And it's a game. And we're just we're fortunate to be on that platform in women's golf. And
I mean, you say it's just golf, but I mean,
it's golf, but with some incentives. Like,
it's kind of a slightly different level, isn't it?
Huge.
Yeah.
It's
and you've experienced, I mean, the hammering and then the greatest comeback. I mean, and then the winning putt. I mean, you kind of experienced it all in three times. I know you want to play more, but I'm not sure where else you go from there.
That is really true. I didn't really think of it that way. But yeah, I've been on the low. I've been on the high. And I've kind of played my way onto the team. And I think someone had called me one of the leaders on the team. And honestly, I never really thought of myself as a leader. I kind of just go about my business and keep to myself. But I think playing with two rookies, with Danielle and Angel, really forced me to step it up. And I was playing really good at the time, and I guess I just led by example. I don't know.
You were the minority pod, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. But we did not name ourselves that.
Who gave you that
Julie
name?
Julie Inkster.
Okay.
We kind of said it in a kind of jokingly, like, this is not going to leave the room. And then she says it in a press conference. We're like, great. It's all right. We'll just call ourselves that.
You've been a number of years now on tour.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't even spoken about your win.
Yeah.
I know you'd like more wins. I mean, I was reading something with Kevin Na, who said he won for the second time recently on the PGA Tour. And he was saying when he only had one win that it really annoyed him, as much as, you know, he's winning and the money kept coming in. And, you know, he was up there in the top money list ever on the PGA Tour. Mm-hmm. It grated him, annoyed him. How do you feel about the fact you've achieved, you've got a win, but where does that leave you?
It's an unsettling feeling. Honestly, I had never said this anywhere else, and except my swing coach. I said, sometimes I wish I didn't have that first win, because it came so unexpectedly. It came. I think I won by four or three shots. I got a different understanding of winning. I felt like it came easy that week. So then I got this perception that every win's going to be easy, and it's not. And in some ways, I got lazy. In some ways, I thought it was going to come easy. My expectations went higher, but my work ethic came lower based on that first win. So when things didn't happen like that, obviously I got really frustrated. I got angry. I wasn't a brat, but, you know, I started making changes when there didn't need to. All I needed was heart, hunger, and the same work ethic that I had beforehand. And so sometimes I think, like, I really wish that didn't happen, because it had led on this path. But another way I look at it is, I won once, I could do it again. And I have the right people. It is annoying to only get announced on the first tee that you only have one win. But on the other hand, I've had such a good career. A great career considered of my expectations when I first came out here. But yeah, I do wish that I had more, and I probably could have had more wins. But this is golf. Everyone is out here to win, and everyone is so good. Just to be considered one of the best in the world is a pretty cool thing. So I can kind of look at it from both sides, and I can get where Kevin Na got that. And I do feel like it is pretty annoying, but I'm still trying to get win number two. And
sure. I mean, but going back to where we started the conversation, which was at the LPGA Tour Q School.
Yeah.
You were the 20th name of the 24 cards.
Yeah.
And yet, if you want to look at it in perspective, as I said at the start, your career is probably number one of those 20 names.
I didn't ever thought of that.
Yeah. So, I mean,
that's pretty cool. I'll take it.
Yeah. But it just shows, you know, the fight you had to just to become that number 20.
Yeah.
To set you on that path.
Mm-hmm.
It was an incredible finish. Two birdies last four holes.
Yeah. To get into
birdie
playoff.
The 18th. Yeah. Birdie to become number one of nine players and set you on your way. That's probably why in the end you had chosen it.
Yeah. It's definitely one to remember, and one that I always look back on, and whenever I want to give this game up and I'm at a low and I just look at that round and said, there's a fighter in me. And there was a fighter in 2016 when I was at the bottom of the Solheim Cup list. And I told Julie, I'm going to get my shit together. I promise. and I fought my way, top 10s coming, and fought my way on that Solheim Cup team last year.
So is that, do you think, sometimes what it takes? You know, because when your back's really against the wall, it's when you're going to fight hardest. I mean, it's hard to
probably
replicate that, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much my track record. I'm up against the wall, I'm up against the ropes, and I have to do something, and I just find a way to do it. I find the right people. I find the fighter in myself, and I get the job done. I think my dad saw that as a seven-year-old girl. I think I get most of that from my mother, who has a get things done kind of mentality, and my dad has a work ethic. So I'm just, I think the whole, my whole path, my whole career has been worth it. So it's been an exciting journey.
How good was that? I didn't really actually know Lizette from a personal point of view. Of course, I commentated on her a number of times, but I came away feeling like she was my new best friend. Of course, she'll have other ideas on such matters, but it's an incredible story, isn't it? Uplifting, heartwarming, inspiring, all those things, and a lot more as well. Love to hear your thoughts on that too as well. You can get in touch the usual ways, at The Round Podcast on Twitter, at The Round Golf Podcast on Facebook, and you've been doing that with regard to the first two episodes of the new series, of course, talking about the Gary Player and the Padraig Harrington one. So I wanted to give you a little flavour of some of you that have been in touch, and it's been great to hear feedback from you. Flat Cap Golfer said it was entertaining, informative, fantastic podcast. He says Gary's got a reputation for what he calls politely immodesty. However, he says his admiration for Bobby Jones, Ben Hogan, Peter Thompson was great to hear. He said he didn't know how much he regretted not signing for the Hogan Company either. Mike Miller said he really enjoyed the pod. He's somebody who said he gets impatient with most things after 10 to 15 minutes. He says despite what Player claims to think, he believes he cares and that his legacy is assured. He says it was refreshing also to hear Player talk about Jones, Hogan, Jack, Seve. He says most people these days think the world of golf begins and ends with Tiger or Spieth or Koepka. Matt Cooper says remarkable. He says spat his tea back into his cup at least four times. I hope you didn't carry on drinking, Matt. He said he snorted it through his nose once and had a coughing fit. He even praised more than anyone else, referring to Player. He says he has absolutely no idea what round he picked, but very entertaining. And on the Harrington one, Paul Mix got in touch to say fantastic insight into one of Ireland's sporting heroes. He said the detail of the last three holes at Wingfoot 2006 was great, and that realisation that he would be a major champion. Padraig, he says, always great to listen to. So that's, as I say, a little flavour. More of that, please. At The Round Podcast on Twitter, at The Round Golf Podcast on Facebook. A chance again to say big thanks once more to our sponsors, Navigate Constructing and Red Ray. And if you're enjoying it, you've clicked on various ways, subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode. And please, please, please give us a rating if you get the opportunity. It doesn't take long to do, and it really is a big help. Big names, fascinating stories, more of the same coming up in the next few weeks. Hopefully you can join us then too.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.